This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, M-I-D-I.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03 and made it to Friday afternoon, September 13th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Hart. A restaurant on Chicago's North Side getting inspiration from and giving support to local farmers in the Midwest agricultural community. We'll meet the chef in our first Entrepreneur Friday segment. But right now, it's great for kids to be active, but many of those ventures can come with a pretty steep price. Joining us now on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Sherry Greco-Rikus, co-founder of Rappaport Rikus Capital Management in Chicago and author of the book Maximize Your Return on Life. Sherry, thank you for joining us today. And this is a source of, I wouldn't say stress or frustration, maybe bemusement, that I and my fellow parents have at the beginning of every school year, is that you try to keep tab on expenses, Sherry, make sure you're not living beyond your means, incorporating all the lessons that we have learned from your segments on this show. But when you start adding up the cost of music lessons, or maybe a couple of club sports or a dance team, that is an expense that rivals your mortgage when it's all said and done.
And yes, Rob, thanks for having me. We have had that experience with both of my children. One of them was an ice skater, which is probably one of the more expensive sports. And my husband used to say he freezes in an ice rink and burns dollar bills for the skating. and my other daughter played travel softball. But, you know, there's a big, after living through all that, there's a huge ROI, or return on investment, for the kids. And what I've seen is all these activities, they teach discipline, they teach passion, being on time. And, you know, as parents, we have to prioritize. And for our family, our kids were so active in their sports that we really didn't travel a lot. And so we kind of took our travel budget and put it towards their sports. So, again, it's priorities.
Yeah, when talking about maximizing your return on investment, you bring up a very good point, and that is I grouse every time the bill comes for various activities, but that thought and that moment of grumbling goes straight out the window when they're proud of themselves after a swim meet, when they're proud of themselves after a dance competition, when they have finished a musical recital, and you do impart lifelong lessons. Maybe they're not going to become an Olympic swimmer. I don't think I have any Katie Ledeckis in my family. However, they are learning very important lifelong lessons about discipline, about working on a team. And I don't know if you've encountered this over the course of your professional life, but I have heard from some hiring managers who say they look highly upon new applicants who did play high school and college sports just because they have a work ethic that maybe some other people don't possess.
And I actually, that was one of the points I was going to make. You know, one of my daughters who actually played college softball, when she went for a pretty competitive position, they said one of the reasons she got it was they were looking at athletes. You know, she was up at 6 a.m. and going to practice. So I think that that's really important. But one thing on your list, these sports and activities, it does teach these kids how to lose, and life is not always winning. And we used to have a saying in our family, we don't love you anymore if you won, and we don't love you anymore if you lost. We love you just the same. And a funny story is my husband just took up tennis, and he had a match, and he lost pretty bad. He was on a team, and he was upset. So my daughter called him up and said, "I don't love you any more that you lost, and I don't love you any more that you won. I love you just the same."
Was he doing like the full John McEnroe?
Yeah, he was trying, but you know, he had a tough match and he lost. So, you know, sometimes it comes full circle. I don't love you any more if you win. I don't love you any less if you lose. But and both my kids, through their sports, ended up teaching. My ice skater was, you know, teaching lessons. My daughter, who played softball, was coaching and being an umpire. So, you know, it can add a little money. And sometimes it's good to have your kids have skin in the game, you know, especially in high school when some of the coaching and some of these travel sports gets pretty expensive.
Sherry Greco-Rikus, co-founder of Rappaport Rikus Capital Management in Chicago. Author of the book, Maximize Your Return on Life.
Your best stock option. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's Entrepreneur Friday, and in this segment, we talk to a Chicago chef whose restaurant is truly farm to table. We welcome in Chef Devin Quinn, chef and partner at Eden, which is located in Chicago's Avondale neighborhood. Thank you for joining us today. Now, you originally opened Eden near the United Center, and what drove your decision to move from the West Side to the Northwest Side?
Oh, well, the pandemic was the real deciding factor there. We fortunately were able to break our lease, and we checked out probably 40 different properties and ended up moving into our current location.
Now, how much of the produce that you use in your dishes that do you grow on site?
I would say that all of the things that kind of highlight our dishes are grown on site. So we grow mainly herbs and a few greens. We have a few highlight things like figs and a lemon tree and things like that. But nearly all of the produce, almost 100% of our produce, is either produced in our greenhouse or comes from the farmer's market or from a farm itself.
Now, you have formal culinary training, but before that, you graduated with a degree in biology from Hope College. So did your kind of journey through sustainable and farm-to-table practices, did it start when you were undergoing that formal culinary training, or did it begin in Holland, Michigan?
You know what, I've tried to keep whatever connections I've made as I've made decisions in my life throughout my careers and my current career. I've been cooking for professionally for about 20 years, and I think that the concept of getting involved with growing and stuff, it's that I'm not a great salesperson unless I have a true connection with what I'm doing, and there's no better way in food to be connected than to take it from seed to fruition.
And does it also change your view of ingredients? Because I know, as someone who goes to the local farmer's market every Saturday morning during the warmer months, I have a different relationship with, you know, a different thought process about evaluating produce once you buy it from the person who grew it, as opposed to going to a large grocery store. And that's no knock on the grocery store.
No, I think that's absolutely true, and I am going to every Green City Market every Wednesday and Saturday, and really hand selecting produce for our restaurant, making sure that and creating that connection with the farmers and understanding where those things are coming from and what it truly is at peak season and what am I looking for next? What can we grow next year? That kind of thing.
You have the garden and you have the greenhouse on the Northwest Side. What works really well in Chicago, and what are some attempts at growing something that didn't work out nearly as well for you?
Sure. Growing in greenhouses, it has great advantages and it has a few disadvantages. You know, it's a humid environment and it's a hot environment. So certain tropical things grow really well, things that are naturally suited to those types of environments. But things that aren't, you have to, really doctor some of the variables to be able to get things to grow. Certain things certainly fail. Part of the fun of it, and it is the ongoing experiment to see kind of what comes new, what does well, finding new ingredients. We found one recently called Wacate, which is a Peruvian mint, does really excellent in our greenhouse and is an awesome herb that most people don't know.
Chef Devin Quinn, chef and partner at Eden, located in the Avondale neighborhood in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up, the growth of Restoration Hardware as a lifestyle brand.
Lunch money for all generations. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Shares of Restoration Hardware are up by nearly 25% today following the release of the company's latest earnings report. Let's discuss the success of this growing brand with Bob Phibbs, CEO of the Retail Doctor in New York. Find him online, retaildoc.com. Bob, thank you for joining us today. And this seems to fly in the face of the conventional wisdom, especially in retail today, that shoppers are looking for deals. They are willing to trade down just so they can pay less. And yet, Restoration Hardware, a premium brand, is really breaking it in, it would seem.
You know, what I appreciate about all this is it's really great news, but it is news. I think we are getting so many pundits who have told us everybody's trading down. No one has money. Everything is gray. And yet, Gary Friedman, I think is the CEO, continues to flummox people because they always count them out. It's up 25%. And that's over, you know, year over year sales went up 7% in Q2. They went up 12%. And, oh, a dire housing market. Oh, interest rates, and the sky is falling. And yet, the epitome of a luxury retailer is showing the way. And I think it's very exciting.
Now, in the before times, the Restoration Hardware was like an upscale home furnishing brand. But now it's so much more. It's a hotel and a restaurant chain with locations throughout the country and in some premium markets.
Absolutely. And they, you know, that's the advantage of having the online store, because you can see exactly where your sales are coming from. So you open a store and boom, not only does online go up, but the physical store. And, you know, what's interesting again is Gary's been there for, I don't know, 20 years or something, a long time. And he was the first to introduce the idea of, we're going to charge you if you want to be on our deals. It's almost like a charging fee for browsing. And they have a huge membership of people who are connected to the brand and all that data. And so they exceed their expectations. They have a great online presence. And there's just a style, you know, when you're in Restoration Hardware, right?
And
Well,
I was going to say, the RH brand also expanding to restaurants and hotels is almost like a back to the future kind of strategy, because for the longest time, and I think a lot of Chicagoans do remember, above and beyond the Walnut Room, Marshall Field's had restaurants in their stores, yeah, in shopping malls. So you could enjoy a lunch at Marshall Field's. And then Kohler, with their hotel in Wisconsin, you could stay in a very nice room furnished by luxury plumbing fixtures. So it seems like that RH is trying to take from the best of both worlds.
Well, they're operating on all cylinders. And I had to find the quote from the CEO. And he said, our vision is to create an endless reflection of hope, inspiration, and love that will grow the human spirit. That's the thing that I really like about the brand. It's not this constant, oh, everybody's stealing everything. Oh, nobody's buying anything on that we're putting out on sale. They figured it out. And more importantly, for the rest of retail, I mean, let's take about the broader market. Even Gap is up, for God's sake. So it is showing the consumer is out there. They're spending. And as much as the recessionists are trying to tell us there's no light, facts are proving otherwise. And that's pretty exciting as we head into what's expected to be a modest holiday season.
Bob Phibb, CEO of the Retail Doctor in New York, thank you for joining us today.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain. All symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
This is Chicago's news, traffic, and weather station, News Radio 105.9. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. A busy building in downtown Chicago has a water quality issue. Homeowners in California deal with the threat of a massive, quickly spreading wildfires. Entrepreneur Friday dropping out of the corporate fashion world to be a parent and forging a new career in children's clothing. Store-branded credit cards may not be the best choice for consumers. WBBM Business. Markets are higher. The Dow is up 374 points. The NASDAQ up 138. The S&P 500 up 38. 84 degrees right now in Chicago under partly sunny skies. It's 1231, topping our news at the half hour. There are apparently issues with the water at the Dirksen Federal Courthouse in downtown Chicago. Channel 11 reporting problematic levels of the Legionella bacteria have been detected in the public cafeteria and at the juror kitchen area. Employees were told this summer that the General Services Administration plans to investigate the building's infrastructure and equipment to determine what needs to be done. There are now more than 100,000 acres of wildfire-scorched land in Southern California. CBS's Ben Tracy tells us about one Los Angeles-area homeowner who's had to save his property multiple times.
A very wet winter, followed by the hottest summer in California's history, created dry vegetation that is now fueling these fires. Robert Lucas is relieved his home is still standing.
Having gone through this now at least three times, does it give you any pause about living here?
Oh, absolutely not. What are you going to do? You know, you got to live somewhere.
Fire crews are getting some relief with temperatures now in the 80s after being over 100 earlier in the week. It's 1232 as the noon business hour continues. Markets are higher once again. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Ryan Dietrich, Chief Market Strategist with the Carson Group in Omaha, Nebraska. Ryan, thank you for joining us today. And the earlier this week, there was a little bit of market volatility that lent credence to that belief that September is the cruelest month or the most volatile month on the calendar. But the markets have been rattling off quite a few wins since then.
Yeah, Rob, thanks for having me back this week and not last week, because last week was the worst week of the year for the S&P 500. And now here we are this week. Every single day has been higher, assuming today finishes higher. And it's looking like one of the best weeks of the year. Now, last comment here, Wednesday morning we came in, S&P was down 1.6% at the lows, about 90 minutes into trading, eventually closed up over 1%. That's a huge reversal, and obviously we rallied since then. So you know what? We're getting that volatility in September. Final comment on September. Usually the second half of September historically is weak. It is the worst month the last 10 years, 20 years, and since 1950. So we might not be out of the woods yet, but you know what? Hey, we got about a flat September right now, which all in all, after the way we started, let's not complain too much.
And how much of this is just setting the table for next week's Fed policy meeting?
Yeah, probably just about all of it, right? I mean, it's what's the Fed going to do? We slice and dice everything. The bottom line on Wednesday afternoon, the Fed will finally start to cut rates. And the reality is, yes, they probably should have started at the last meeting 6 weeks ago. Inflation continues to overall improve. But the issue now the Fed has is inflation, as we've been saying, last year's problem. I think the Fed might agree there. Now the labor market, right? The labor market's averaged only 116,000 jobs the last 3 months. So the labor market's slowing down. So the Fed has to thread that needle, so to speak. Big question is, will it do 25 or 50? The base case still is probably a 25 basis point cut. But we'll just have to wait and see. But the reality is now the Fed is cutting, and that's something we haven't seen in quite a while.
We're talking about today's market activity with Ryan Dietrich, Chief Market Strategist at the Carson Group in Omaha, Nebraska. Now, there was a little bit of a sell-off earlier this week on the Consumer Price Index report that that really looked like a disappointment sell-off, because that CPI read, even though it was the best in almost 3 years, it really took the possibility of a 50 basis point or a half a point cut off the table.
Yeah, it did. I mean, listen, that was that Wednesday, the reversal day, where we had a big sell-off. It did come back. Now, let's just talk briefly about that CPI report. When you looked at it, the headline number, core CPI, is what the Fed focuses on, was up 0.3% month over month, expected 0.2. So it came in a little hot. But I think once people looked into the data, Rob, what they realized was there was a big jump in rent prices, a big jump in shelter. We look at the private data, and a lot of people have seen this for over a year now. The private data has been seeing big improvements there. So ex shelter, if you take that out, core CPI is running sub 2%. Headline CPI inflation is running sub 2%. That's that Fed's measure is 2% they're shooting for. So we're not minimizing it. I think that's why we saw that big reversal once people realized, you know what, goods prices are down, car prices are down, furnishing prices are down. I'm not saying everything's down, but there really still is decent improvement in the inflation backdrop, which again leads to the Fed probably 25. Let's be clear here. The last couple of times the Fed started cutting with 50 basis points was the 100-year pandemic in 2007 and 2001. So when they start big, so to speak, we have seen, like, you know, that means, oh my goodness, the economy's in a lot of trouble. We look at the economy here, and we think the economy's still doing pretty well. That's why, you know, 25 probably is what they're going to do, and then multiple down the road. But they maybe don't need to start so big right now unless they're truly worried about the economy. So we'll just worry. We'll see what they do on Wednesday.
It seems like the big trader question going forward, once they do announce that interest rate cut at the policy meeting next week, is how many quarter point cuts do you get after that? And are there going to be bets underpinned on every meeting or every other meeting? And what impact is that going to have on equity prices?
Well, that's some good questions there. I mean, the reality is we're probably going to see three or four meetings in a row of rate cuts is the reality. Again, is where we are. You know, if you look at like things like Fed funds futures looking out a year or two, I mean, there's you know, upwards of seven or eight potential cuts being looked at the next couple of years. Now, sometimes that's not always right, but the reality is this year there's I think three more meetings, right? I think September, November, December. We're going to see, in all likelihood, some cuts every one of them. And what's a little rare about that, usually you don't see the Fed doing much in election years historically. Obviously, it's an election year, but the truth, again, is inflation is last year's problem, so they should be cutting because the labor market, again, is slowing.
Ryan Dietrich, Chief Market Strategist with the Carson Group in Omaha, Nebraska. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next in Entrepreneur Friday, staying home with the kids and giving birth to a new career.
Cash, credit, debit, and totally free. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Entrepreneur Friday, and today we're meeting a businesswoman who's combining a love of motherhood with her understanding of the fashion industry. We welcome in Stacy Frazier, founder and CEO of Pink Chicken New York, based in New York. Find her online, pinkchicken.com. Stacy, thank you for joining us today. And this whole thing began 18 years ago. You were in the fashion world, then you had a baby, and then you decided to pull back a little bit, and that's where Pink Chicken was born.
That's true. That's nice to see you today. Yes, I spent my career in kind of corporate fashion, and then realized after having a second child that I'd like to kind of create a brand on my own terms. And so that's where Pink Chicken was born.
Now, when you talk about corporate fashion before you went off on your own, describe that for us.
So I worked at Ralph Lauren. I worked at Tommy Hilfiger and The Gap. My last role, I was a senior vice president of design at Old Navy. So it was a lot of working and traveling and late hours. And so wanting to have a more balanced existence with my family is when I started Pink Chicken.
And then how did you make the turn from working in corporate fashion and working in all these well-known fashion houses to basically making designs for your own children?
Yes. Yeah, so I think that it really, you know, a lot of entrepreneur things start with a passion. And for me, I had collected vintage textiles and fabrics over the years. Both my grandparents were in the fashion industry. So when I decided to take a pause on the corporate world, I started making dresses for my girls. And people started to stop me on the street and say, "Wait, this is really interesting." And then I think at that moment, I thought, like, oh, maybe there's a business here. It wasn't like I set out to, like, create the business. It just kind of happened. based on passion and drive. Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, when you leave a salaried job in corporate America just to have more time to yourself and have more time for your family, did you have a little bit of pause, though, before when going into business for yourself? Because I'm sure you've heard all the stories of entrepreneurs where they're working twice as hard and working even longer hours just to get the business off the ground. Were you worried about that?
I wasn't, because I didn't have a business plan. I didn't set out to create this like large company. It was something that I started out of like my love of apparel and prints and fabrics. And so it just kind of happened organically. I mean, maybe ultimately I thought I would go back to work, but then things started picking up with the brand. And then I thought, okay, wait, this is a business. I think this is going to be my job for the next 20 years.
So when you were making these designs and looking through the website, I would say it's almost vintage inspired.
Yes.
It looks like something you would see from long ago, but updated for a modern context. When you design clothes for kids, mm-hmm. how much of it is just making sure it just looks cool and is eye-catching to parents? Parents are thinking, how will this look in the family Christmas card photo? Things like that, versus the materials that you use to make the item. Is this going to live up to a trip to the playground, or in the case of clothing for infants, how many times can someone spit up on this before it falls apart?
Right. Well, I think that whenever we're creating, we think of our customer and our community and the sweet purity and innocence of childhood, and that is usually the base. But I think when we're known for our prints and our patterns, and I love the way that you described us, we do want there to be like a familiarity with what we're doing. Like, you're like, oh, my grandmother had a print like that, or I had a print like that when I was younger. So we really kind of look back to get inspired from a print standpoint. And then as far as silhouettes, like, we always say we're no fuss, always stylish. We create clothes that kids can live in, can play in, and that both kids and the moms love. So it's easy to do that. And it's just such an honor to be a part of these families' moments, dressing families for years. It's been amazing.
Stacey Fraser, founder and CEO of Pink Chicken New York in New York. Find her online, pinkchicken.com. Thank you for joining us today. Still to come, weighing the value of a store-specific credit card versus a general one.
Cashing in with conversation. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Retailers are always pitching customers on their credit cards, offering perks and incentives, but are they the best choice? Let's get some insight from Ted Rossman, senior industry analyst, Bankrate.com, based in New York. Ted, thank you for joining us today. And I feel it's appropriate we're having this conversation in downtown Chicago, not too far away from Marshall Fields, which was the first store to offer a charge card. But now everyone gets in on the act. And just like every little thing in life, it can add up to a big issue.
Yeah, these cards are big business. In fact, a city analyst estimates that Macy's made about half of its total profit a couple of years ago from its credit card. Senator Durbin has quipped that airlines are basically credit card companies that happen to fly a bunch of airplanes. We're talking multi-billion dollar partnerships in some cases. The important takeaway for consumers is that retail cards charge really high interest rates. If you ever carry a balance, it's not the best choice for you, because many of these are over 30%. In fact, the average is 30.45%. The worst offenders are at 35.99%. That compares to the average general purpose credit card rate of about 21%.
Now, are there some store charge cards that may be better than others, that maybe the benefits really do outweigh some of the pitfalls if you don't pay it off in full on time?
There are really two use cases when these cards can work for you. One is if you pay in full and you get a really nice discount off the initial purchase. Like if you're buying a bunch of appliances or electronics or furniture and they give you 20% off that first purchase and you pay it off before interest hits, that makes sense. The other one, on more of an ongoing basis, again, requires you to pay in full to avoid interest for this to be worth it. There are some stores like Amazon and Target and Best Buy that they'll give you 5% back every time you use their card at their store. that's worth it if you're loyal and if you're avoiding interest. But just be really careful because, like I said, a lot of these interest rates are real whoppers. I mean, we're talking 30%+, which normally is more of a deep subprime kind of audience, but it's pretty common on store cards.
We're talking about store credit cards with Ted Rossman, senior industry analyst, Bankrate.com, based in New York. And above and beyond the potential interest rate whopper you could be facing, some store credit cards may have a very limited ecosystem.
The store-only cards, or the closed-loop cards, as they're sometimes called, can only be used at that particular chain of stores. A lot of times people get a store credit card as their first credit card. Maybe they fall for that pitch at the checkout counter, or they're trying to use it as a credit-building tool. It could be a credit-building tool, but I would suggest one of the open-loop cards, the ones with the Visa, MasterCard, American Express logo, like the Amazon Prime Visa, for example. That can be used everywhere, and that one actually has pretty good rewards at restaurants and other places besides just Amazon. You have to pay in full for it to be worth it, but yeah, you should be aware of the distinction between the store-only version and the one with, let's say, the Visa logo that you can use anywhere.
Ted Rossman, senior industry analyst, Bankrate.com in New York. Thank you for joining us today.